Welcome to part two of our interview with Michael Brown about Haunted State, Wisconsin. We're talking about energy and it being in places like that. The other concept that will be thrown out there would be residual energy. And I'm not quite sure how to phrase this question, so I'll just kind of throw it all out there and get your thoughts. What would be the difference here? I mean, I understand the difference between residual and a conscious entity, but I guess what would be the triggering reason why you have a conscious entity there at PAPS versus, or any place like it, versus a situation where it is just the residual, the energy repeating itself over and over? Can the two exist simultaneously? Can that energy just be repeating? Because there's obviously haunting situations where it doesn't seem to be conscious at all. It's just the energy going over and over and over. That person is consciously probably not there anymore.
Right.
But I wonder if the two can exist simultaneously. Because that to me seems like it'd be a place where you could have it. The energy is repeating itself for whatever reason. But the spirits who also love being there, maybe their energy is also there simultaneously. Does that make much sense?
It does.
Okay.
I always say residual energy is like a record skipping.
Yeah.
I have experienced residual energy there. I mean, I've had multiple. I think I've filmed there maybe 8 times now. I've had the same thing happen multiple times. So I think, yeah, it's possible. There's clearly intelligent entities there, though. In the second movie, I ask, what color is my shirt? And they answer, black. And my shirt is black. So, I mean, and there's tons of other examples as well that are happening there. But not only are we getting voices there, but we're getting full body apparitions. There's countless photos of, like, it almost looks like something out of Harry Potter, like with some of like the flying or like the smoke monster from Lost, where people will see like smoke. Mm-hmm. You know, like out of nowhere. And I mean, people send me this stuff all the time, you know, and we were able to capture a shadow person. Not, it's so cliche, and it's crazy to me how we were able to, I mean, we had a 480p camera at the time. I mean, not very high quality camera. And you hear my name, Michael, being said, and you see this thing poke out its head around the corner, and the moment it says my name, you kind of see it's like, it's almost like it has eyes, like the Mothman prophecy a little bit. And then you see its eyes right when it says Michael, its eyes light up and then it's gone. And we cut it on tape and it's in the first film. It's crazy. And I would say that was at the time I wasn't scared because I didn't realize it until a week later when I was editing the film. I didn't know it was there. Mm-hmm. But had I known that, I don't know how I would have felt about it. So in the second film, now mind you, fill in 3 years, I have dreams about this thing now, like talking to me, and it really becomes personal for me now because I'm like, okay, well, I went and I did this thing. I filmed this movie. I had this experience, and now it wasn't like bothering me per se. And I still have to circle back to First Ward, by the way, but, schoolhouse in Wisconsin Rapids. But this thing was in my dreams, just communicating with me. So I went back in the second film at the very beginning to kind of confront it. And I'm really glad I did because everything has stopped since I did that. But I kind of want to kind of pivot back to First Ward Schoolhouse because I did say earlier that I was going to kind of go back to it. This is by far the most terrifying thing I've ever had happen to me. I've spoken about this many times publicly, but I can't say it enough because I do want people to know that when you are messing with this energy, you may not know what you're doing. And I don't want people to get in over their head. I did. It was the second place I ever filmed in my entire life. And the claims were, and I don't know what kind of language I can use, so I'll edit myself.
You can say whatever you want. So go ahead.
Oh, I can. Okay.
Yes.
I didn't know that. Okay.
Yep.
I'm glad to know that. So I can tell the story in full then. So the story is the real estate agent, when she was trying to sell this First Ward Schoolhouse in Wisconsin Rapids, and nobody would go near it. Nobody would buy it. The locals just wouldn't have nothing to do with it. It closed down in 1977, and I think it was 2005, and no one had purchased it. So it just was sitting there, and they were ready to knock it down. So I think the owner bought it for under $50,000. And when the real estate agent was in there, she had something grab her and hold her against the wall where she couldn't move. Now, when you hear something like that, your immediate reaction is to go, you're crazy or you're full of shit. You're wrong, you know? Mm-hmm. But what we do is when we talk to people, we take them seriously. We believe them. We'll give them the benefit of the doubt. Well, we had two other accounts unrelated from through our research, because we have people that do research that had the same thing happen. Now, these three women don't know each other. They had the same experience. So right away, we're realizing we're dealing with something that may be malevolent. It may be bad. So we need to be careful when we go in there, because we do a full background on the history. And sometimes we fall upon paranormal information or evidence. That's not really our goal, but sometimes it just happens. In this case, it happened. And so when I went down there, I watched a lot of the popular shows at the time that were on cable. So I thought, I'm going to provoke. Well, bad idea. I shouldn't have done it. I went down there, and this is very profane what I'm about to say. So I'm warning you. So if there's children in the room, plug their ears, because I'm about to be extremely uncouth here. But I went downstairs and I said, come on, you fucking pussy. Push me, you know, kind of like the ending of The Exorcist when the guy's like, come into me, you know, do this to me.
Sure.
So I went down there. I got myself really worked up. I said pretty much anything that came into my head, I said it. Mm-hmm. And I kept challenging him and degrading him, and nothing happened. Because I'm like, you're not going to do this to a man. You're only going to do this to women, because it only had happened to three women. Mm-hmm. So I go throughout the night. There was a part in the night where I had played. One of the things we do is we play music sometimes to see if we get reactions to it. And that night I was in an 80s rock mood. Don't know why, but I played the band Rat, the 80s glam band Rat. And I played some Rat songs, and everyone was teasing me because they thought Rat was ridiculous. I'm actually a fan still. I like them. But so they started calling me a rock star. Well, that night, like an hour later on the SB7, we hear a voice say rock star, which is really cool, I think. And then by the end of the night, I had made a promise earlier in the attic to one of the spirits that we would go back. I would go back and say goodbye to him, because we were having a conversation. And so I went back to say goodbye to him while everyone else went in the basement. Well, while we're in the basement, there's this really deep voice that said, where's Rockstar? And I didn't know about this until later on. So I go home, and two nights later, I had three of my son's toys. And now at the time, my son is like 3 or 4 years old. Three of my son's toys went on, like battery powered toys. They all went on, 1, 2, 3. They didn't go on at the same time either. It was like one went on, then another, and another. And I'm like, that's kind of weird. And then the next night I was dating someone, and we had just watched the movie Black Swan. So I was already kind of freaked out from the ending of that movie. And all of a sudden we heard a laugh in my basement. We heard footsteps. And again, the toys went on. So she left. And then the third night, I had at the time, my producer over, one of my cast members over, and I was kind of talking shit about First Ward, and one of the magnets on my fridge fell off, and I thought it was kind of weird, and it happened again. So finally I realized, like, there's something here, because previously that night I'd had a dream. It was like a third person dream where something was walking through my house, and when it jumped on top of me, I woke up. In reality, I woke up and I couldn't breathe. I couldn't scream. I couldn't make any noise. So I was really shaken at this point. So I lost my cool and I just said, get the fuck out of my house. And like, my poor producer is sitting there like, what is happening right now? You know? And I went crazy. And cause that's one of the things I had read you're supposed to do. Mm-hmm. And I did it. And then I put salt on my windows, sea salt on my windows and my doorway. I was really freaked out, and it stopped after that, luckily for me. But when I kind of like was able to, you know, let the months go by and think about it and calm down, I realized it was because I went down there and I provoked and I was nasty, and whatever was there, I pissed it off. And it comes back to turn. Now there is a 8-foot entity that's been spotted in this location. It's the First Ward Schoolhouse in Wisconsin Rapids, and he goes by the name of Shepherd, and he has a very deep voice, and he's known to cause a lot of mischief there in a bad way. He'll break things and threaten people, and they say, I don't know if I believe this, but they say that when you pass, you are a projection of yourself when you are trying to manifest. And again, I have no evidence to back that up. So obviously this person has a really big ego. Maybe they were a bad person. I don't know that, but really, really scary situation. And because of that, what we do on the show now is I am always respectful. The way I speak to you, the way I speak to anyone on the street, where I'm respectful, That's how we investigate. We always say please. We always say thank you. If someone is rude to me, I will be rude in kind, but then I'm always quick to apologize. But for the most part, we're always really respectful because of that experience, because it's just something you really want to be careful. So people will watch our show, or they'll watch the popular shows on cable. They'll go out, they'll buy the equipment, and then we have this happen so many times where people will say, hey, I bought this device and I've got something in my house now. So it's just something that we really want to caution people on, is just, you know, it's better to enjoy it from afar than to do it and not know what you're doing.
And that is very, very true. When you had that experience where it almost seems like this was an attachment of some sort that followed you home, that yeah. that was infesting your dreams and making you feel this way, did you ever have pause where you said, okay, this, I need a new hobby? this is more than I was bargaining for when I jumped into the world of paranormal.
You know what? I didn't think that.
Nope.
The way that I am is when I am challenged, I'll dig my heels in. Mm-hmm. There've been a lot of things I've done in my life that people told me I can't do these things, or I'm not qualified to do these things. And it's only crazy until you do it. It's kind of it's always been my thing. And now Nike stole that from me, by the way. I hear Nike saying that. but that's how I've always thought. So I thought, you know what? I'm going to figure this out. Because if I start something, I really want to finish it. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I had my doubts for my son, because, I mean, you hear about some of this really, really malevolent stuff.
Sure.
And you go, okay, first of all, do I believe it? But, you know, it's becoming like more of a reality for me, because I've had these experiences, you know, where that's where I worry about. Because, you know, and I don't want to get into demonic stuff, but like, in the realm of that is what happens from the stories I've heard and the accounts I've heard, is that they won't come after you. They'll come after your dog. They'll come after your wife. They'll come after your kids, you know, because it hurts you more.
Yeah.
Whether or not that's true or not, I don't know. And hopefully I never find that out. But that's definitely something that I thought of, was I thought of that. So then my next thought was, how can I protect myself? How can I protect the people I film with? Can we protect each other? Because I don't know if we can, you know? And now it's been, since that happened, it's been now 5 years. Haven't had one issue. And there's things that we do. It really comes down to what you believe, but I really think the fact that we're respectful at all times, we say please, we say thank you, we apologize. There's no hurt feelings, where, you know, we're not going to put ourselves in that situation. And that's what I always tell my son, is, you know, he talks about danger and all this stuff. And I say, listen, the best way to avoid danger is to not put yourself in that situation. So, I mean, I'm going to live the golden rule on that and do that myself. And I think other investigators out there, and, you know, they can speak to this as well too, because I know I'm not the only one out there who has had these experiences. And that's where our show, though, really, there's a really thick line between what a lot of the popular shows do on cable and what our show does. Is a lot of those popular shows make it seem like it's okay to act this way, it's okay to provoke, it's okay to cuss and swear at entities. But you have to remember, a lot of these entities, they're people. Like, yeah. these are moms, these are sisters and husbands and grandpas, and that's really what our show is about. Is our show humanizes the paranormal activity and the paranormal investigation, and that's why I really love what we're doing now. Mm-hmm.
When we were just talking about attachments and things that you do to try and keep them away, let's move over to areas of the second documentary that you worked on about Haunted State. And this should be about the theaters, because there are a lot of theaters in the state of Wisconsin and really throughout the country that have their share of ghost stories attached to them. The first one, one of them that I'd like to discuss is one of my favorites, would be the Grand Theater in Oshkosh, Wisconsin. That, again, it's a personal one to me. That's why I want to talk about it, because it was one of those places you grow up and you hear, oh, that place is haunted. Never really knew much of the backstory other than that place is haunted. Can you give us some of the stories of what people have said over the years about the Grand Theater in Oshkosh, and then what you discovered in your own investigations there?
Oh my God, that place is a gold mine. Normally, to kind of precursor what I'm about to say, normally when you go into a place location that has this much hype, you kind of want to check yourself and kind of lower your expectation, because normally when you go into a place that has high hype, it doesn't meet that hype. But this location did tenfold. Number one experience I've ever had in my life from a paranormal experience was at this location. And Todd can talk about this too. If you ever have Todd on your show, we can talk about this too. Mm-hmm. The story is, now the Opera House goes back to the late 1800s, and it was the place to be they call it the Fox Valley in Wisconsin. That was the place to be. And the Fox Valley incorporates many, many cities around the area. That's where all the vaudeville shows went. I mean, that's where all the big names went, and it was, you know, a cash cow for that city. And then time changed. The 60s, 70s came. It actually was a porn theater. It fell on hard times. They needed to make money to keep the doors open. And that's really common for a lot of theaters, actually. There's another location in Madison that we filmed at. And they had the same thing happen there. And the Grand Opera House, though, has such a rich history in the community. I want to say early 2000s, a coalition was formed to save it. And it was purchased by the city. The city owns it. The city operates it now. And, you know, it has been restored. They took the seats out and put brand new seats in. But man, walking through that building, you just can feel the energy. There is a specific person, and non-disclosure, I'm not allowed to say his name, but I know what it is, but I can't say his name. There was a person who passed away that was a lifetime, I think worked there for 30, 40 years, lifetime employee there. And that is who I believe, and this is just me talking, this is not the production talking, but that is who I believe we were communicating with and who we had experiences with. Because what we, and I don't want to say what happened because I want people to enjoy it, because it's actually the pinnacle of the second film, Theater of Shadows. What we had happen to kind of set that up is we had voices throughout the night, and we had some really crazy orbs, which is something that we don't have a lot of, but the orbs are essentially balls of energy, which is apparently an attempt of manifestation. We don't know if that's what that actually is, but all we know is we're catching stuff, and it's definitely not bugs. But there are eight of us on stage, and we were at the point where we were ready to call it quits. We were very low on energy. It had to be 2:30 in the morning. And now there's eight of us on stage, and as I'm approaching the stage, now mind you, everyone on stage is facing the audience. I had just gotten a drink of water, and I was coming back towards the stage. So I see this thing happen. Now, mind you, everyone on the stage, their backs are facing where this thing happened. So I mention it, and I say, can you do that again, please? Well, not only did it happen again, but it happened bigger and better than it did the first time. And now we're able to capture this on film, and complete madness, because normally when you have a paranormal experience like this, it's just you. Or maybe you and one other person. It's not eight people. So, I mean, not only is this entity that's there intelligent, but it definitely has a flair for the dramatic. Because, I mean, and what better place to, you know, a theater where they do plays and have concerts. Pretty amazing stuff. So it was so amazing that I took the footage. I went back to the Grand. I showed them this. They went, holy shit, this is amazing. So then we tried to figure out, did something malfunction? Like, we didn't know. They didn't know. We're dumbfounded. And we basically don't have an explanation for it, which to me puts it in the paranormal category, because that's what the paranormal is. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I remember seeing the raw footage right after it happened. And yeah, it was like, oh my God, that's pretty amazing. So I normally don't say, we're not going to say what it was, but it is worth seeing for yourself so you don't spoil it. And anyone can see it on Amazon Prime, correct?
Correct. Amazon Prime. It's a Haunted State Theater of Shadows.
it is quite a moment where you're like, oh my God, this is pretty amazing what occurred in that theater. I had been in that theater early 2000s introducing the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, and that was the last time I was in there. And it was, it's one of those, it is truly a grand theater. The ornate woodworking and everything in there, it is what you would imagine to be a grand theater. Of its time and still is today. It's awesome that they've been able to continue to revive it and continue to operate so generations can continue to see it. Tell me about some of the other theaters. I know we're starting to run out of time here on this episode, but I'd love to have you back again to talk more about the web series that you're working on with Amazon Prime about Haunted State and the many locations there. So I think we can fill a whole other hour about that. But let's just wrap up today's episode by talking about the theaters. What are some of the other locations, some of the other theaters in the state of Wisconsin that really stood out to you in your investigations?
Yeah, in Milwaukee, we went to the Pabst Theater, which was really amazing. That ate up a good portion of the film. What we had, we went in there, we filmed for 3 hours, and I couldn't believe how amazing the evidence was there. We actually had a situation where, how can I say this? We had an object picked up and moved on camera at that location. Absolutely amazing, beautiful theater. And that's the thing I love about all of these theaters is they all have this amazing backstory. And there's nothing like it today with our architecture. There's nothing like it because these were all built so long ago. When that location built down, Captain Frederick Pabst was overseas, and he sent a telegram. He said one word. He said rebuild, because he found out that it went down in flames, and he just said rebuild. So they built that, and I'm going to say it was the 1890s, 1880s. A little fuzzy right now because I haven't looked at it in a while, but they rebuilt that in 9 months. And back then, that is amazing. And it was the only, at the time, it was the fourth theater in the country that had air conditioning at the time. So wow. It was a state-of-the-art facility for its time. Captain Frederick Pabst was a modern day Bruce Wayne. I mean, he just, obviously he wasn't Batman, but as far as him being a philanthropist, I can't say the word philanthropist, and donating money and making things nice for the city, I mean, there was no one better in the history of Milwaukee. Also, the Riverside Theater in Milwaukee was a location we filmed at, and then the Barrymore Theater in Madison, which I'd mentioned earlier. Now, to go back to the Riverside Theater, that is a place I don't think I'm ever going to film again. I don't want to use the word dark. I want to use the word dark, but that's not really what I want to say. It's more of essentially like a crabby old man, like, leave me alone, get out of here. Like, they don't want to do any harm, but you could just tell they were not cool with us being there and filming. And so that's a place I'm just going to leave alone because I want to show respect, you know? Mm-hmm. And then the Barrymore Theater is kind of funny because really inappropriate. I mean, if you remember seeing that, they talk about, like I said earlier, it was a porn theater for quite a while. So it was actually kind of creepy because during the day it would show children's films and then at night it would show adult films.
Wow.
So super, super, super creepy. I mean, it brings a new terminology to the sticky floor. I mean, it's pretty messed up actually.
Yeah.
So, when we filmed there, we got evidence that was equally as messed up. I mean, we had, right when we started filming, we had a door close. And it's one of those fire doors that you cannot close. You can't close the door by pulling it. Smoke or fire has to trigger a sensor on it for it to close. So essentially the way these fire doors work is if there's a fire, the smoke, the flames trigger the sensor, the doors close, the fire doors, and then the fire can't get through that part of the building. So right when we started, we had this happen. Earlier, we had lights go on and off, and I was unprepared, so I had to quick grab my iPhone to record it. It made it in the film, luckily. But we had the lights going on and off, and just like earlier, when I talked about the Sunny 97 radio station, this location had many circuit breakers, and so certain lights were all on the same circuit or different circuits, and they're all going on and off. Crazy. Just a great location. I know that place has been recently restored as well, and many famous musicians have played there. It's a great place to see a show in Madison if you're ever in there. And we actually only filmed at those four locations, and we were lucky. Normally we'll double where we're going to film and then pick the best locations. But luckily for us, we were able to film at four places, and all four made the film.
Wow. It is a fascinating film, and I know in the new series, you go to other areas. You know, Door County, quite a popular area that you're exploring with the Haunted State Amazon series, and we'll talk about that on another episode if you'd like to come back, because I'd love to dive into some of those. And I believe you're still in production. Some of the episodes have been released, but you're still putting them out, correct?
Yeah, we still have three episodes to go as of recording this. We're just getting ready to put out episode five.
Okay.
And the one thing I want to quick say about the docuseries is we got really lucky on this. We're streaming in 70 countries.
Wow.
And so that's why I'm really taking my time on getting these out, because mm-hmm. it not only represents the franchise, but it represents the state of Wisconsin. So I want to make us all really proud here
sure.
in Wisconsin.
That wraps up part two of our interview with Michael Brown about Haunted State, Wisconsin. Thank you for being a gravekeeper and keeping our show on the air. Without your support, we wouldn't exist. Until next time, for the Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.